Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Jose Antonio Vargas, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and Emmy-nominated filmmaker and a leading voice for the human rights of immigrants. He is the founder and CEO of Define American, the nation's leading nonprofit media and cultural organization that fights injustice and anti-immigrant hate through the power of storytelling. He has worked as a reporter at The Washington Post, The Huffington Post, The San Francisco Chronicle, and other leading publications, and have written stories for the New York Times Magazine and Time, and his work has appeared in Rolling Stone and The New Yorker. In addition, he has produced and directed documented an autobiographical feature documentary that aired on CNN and White People, an hour-long MTV special on what it means to be young and white in a changing America. Currently, he's subject to deportation at any time, and he has no permanent residence. And his latest book just out is Dear America: Notes from an Undocumented Citizen. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jose Antonio Vargas.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Jose, obviously at this moment, much of the political attention is focused on a caravan coming north from the southern border of Mexico, and the president is obviously in a fact-free zone. He's able to say anything he likes, make stuff up, and as we're 2 weeks away from an election, apparently, the polls are shifting in the Republicans' favor. This blue wave may turn out to be a ripple. So since you're living in the shadows and in the embodiment of all that's wrong and dysfunctional about our immigration policy or the lack thereof, how do you see this political moment?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, that's why I – 7 years ago, I started Define American because I didn't want to live in the shadows anymore, right? Because I think in many ways, if anything, I think this government, specifically this administration, is really hiding not only from the facts, but from what the issue even really is. I don't think it's a surprise, by the way, that, you know, this story right now is this caravan and the fact that the president is mixing Middle Easterners with all of these, you know, quote-unquote people coming from the southern border. This exact narrative happened just a few months ago, and actually it happened before the election in 2016. So I don't think, you know, I don't think none of this is a coincidence. I think this is an effort by a very organized and very disciplined kind of anti-immigrant machine that used to be on the fringes that is now running the White House.
Well, I don't know whether this is conspiratorial, but I've been getting mail from listeners asking me to look into whether or not there is some financial chicanery going on. As we know, President Trump does projection in a psychological sense. He accuses, for example, Hillary Clinton of being a criminal when there's an enormous amount of evidence that he has consorted with criminals for most of his adult life and that his business success may be due to laundering money for the Russian mob and the KGB. So when he blames, as he does in these rallies, George Soros for financing this caravan, inquiring minds want to know whether maybe his friend Adelson is financing the caravan.
I don't think this is a coincidence. I think, especially knowing what we know now in terms of, you know, more information happening that we've gathered around what happened in 2016. To me, the question, though, is who falls for it and why are they falling for it? Right? That's right. The question. Like, what is this? I mean, you know, when I wrote my book, like, part of what I've been thinking about is, like, what I was thinking about is, how do I paint a picture in terms of what the master narrative of immigration has been in this country, right? And really kind of get away from not just the politics and the policies of it, but all this language that we use that in many ways doesn't really reflect the reality of people's lives, right? Yeah. Like, what are we afraid of exactly?
Well, I think in the broadest sense, what white people are afraid of, and that's certainly, I'm not suggesting all white people, but the people who support Trump, the base, as it's referred to, I think that it comes down to the fact that we are in a time when being simply born white no longer confers automatic privilege. And I think a lot of people have a hard time dealing with that.
And, you know, and absolutely, as you said, I mean, this is why I made white people a few years ago, right? But also, I remember exit polls showing right after the election that at least 20 to 30% of Latinos voted for Trump, right? Mm-hmm. I think the Asian community is, you know, I don't know, I'm Filipino. I don't know exactly what the split is, but I know from my own family that Filipino Americans were the highest percentage of Asian groups that voted for Trump. So it is not only white people, but it's like this whiteness as ideology, mm-hmm. right? Which to me is what the Trump administration represents, is whiteness as kind of a belief, and as a way of thinking of yourself as the default, as the norm, as the center, and everybody else has to be explained and has to be feared.
So, in other words, you get a kind of whiteness if you feel that you belong,
yes.
and that the other that's coming in is trying to sort of take away your privilege. Is that?
Yeah, the faceless, nameless, accented other, funded by George Soros, who happens to be, by the way, Jewish. Right. I mean, all the anti-Semitism that is rampant to me is what's also so troubling. Right. And I think we got to call it as it is. And you know, my question is, as a journalist who happens to be undocumented, like what is our responsibility in the news media to call this what this is? Right. And at the same time, make sure that we're providing as much kind of context, not just facts, but context. Right. All the white journalists, for example, that work in newsrooms, when they use terms like caravan, right? Like, what did the Irish think about that? How about the Italians? Right?
Right.
I mean, I remember when I was researching, you know, Irish immigrant history, I didn't know, for example, that after the potato famine, those boats were called coffin ships that they took because so many people died on their way here.
Well, this is, you know, this is the paradox, isn't it? We celebrate ourselves, or a lot of people celebrate the country as a nation of immigrants and the Statue of Liberty, et cetera. But we've had
I would argue, right, and I'm arguing this as a student of American history. I was lucky enough to have gone to a high school in the Bay Area in California where our textbook, our U.S. history textbook, was Howard Zinn, right? That was the assigned text, was the People's History of the United States. I'll never forget when I got to the Washington Post as a reporter and I told people that I came from Mountain View and that was my textbook. People thought I was a communist or something. Like, are you from the left? Are you radical? I'm like, no, that was the history book. I would argue that what we're living through right now are all the lies and the delusions and the myths that we've told ourselves about who we are. I mean, even that statement of a country built by immigrants, like we leave off two groups of people when we say that, right? We leave off Native Americans and we leave off African Americans who are forced to come here. So all of these myths that we've told about ourselves, and even the reality, for example, the fastest growing undocumented population in America are coming from Asia, not from Latin America, certainly not from Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet I would argue that most journalists probably don't even know that. Because the narrative on immigration has always been about Latinos. It's always been about the border south of us. Never the border on top of us, by the way. Never the border that is the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, right, when it comes to people overstaying their visas and coming here.
And again, I'm speaking with Jose Antonio Vargas, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and Emmy-nominated filmmaker and a leading voice for the human rights of immigrants. He's the founder and CEO of Define American, and he's produced and directed, documented, an autobiographical feature documentary that aired on CNN and White People in an hour-long MTV special on what it means to be young and white in a changing America. He's currently subject to deportation at any time, and he has no permanent residence, and his latest book just out is Dear Citizens, Notes from an Undocumented Citizen. But there have been periods in this country where this anti-immigrant fervor that we're experiencing at the moment has emerged, and almost 100 years ago you had the Know-Nothing movement, which in many ways has echoes of the present. The Irish, of course, were the subject of the demonization back then, not the Mexicans and Central Americans. So I don't know whether, you know, I mean, I come from Australia, which has more than its share of racism as well. And, of course, Brexit in the UK, that passed largely because of xenophobia. It was actually financed by the Russians in many ways. And that was all about raising the specter of immigrants invading the UK. So it is a kind of – there's a massive global shift underway, and it will be exacerbated by global warming, which, of course, our president and the Republicans deny. What's your sense of how we can stop this infection of this delusion before it metastasizes?
Thank you for giving this a more global context, because I think that's really important. You know, when I wrote the dedication, part of the dedication is actually to the 258 million migrants in the world. According to the UN, there's 258 million people in the world right now who are moving. We are amidst the largest movement of people the world has ever seen. And as you said, climate change is about to exacerbate all of that. And I actually think coming up with a different, more accurate language around this is absolutely essential. So I would argue, you know, some of our colleagues in the news media call it, you know, a global migration crisis. Right? Well, that's from the perspective of white people who always got to call it what it is. I would argue that it's actually a natural progress of history. It's a human progression, right? So all those, you know, centuries ago that Western countries imperialized and colonized all these other countries, what did they think the impact of that was going to be? Right.
Well, I think they were just out for short-term gain, weren't they? Which is really the problem we have with this administration. There's no planning. There's no vision in Trump world. It's just, you know, rape and pillage and manipulate and lie.
And it's all of these short, you know, kind of reactions to kind of what they're fearing without, again, and I would argue that this is bigger than the Trump administration, right? Because people voted for Trump. That didn't happen overnight. I mean, look at immigration, for example. You know, immigration in this country has been a bipartisan mess. Both parties have been to blame. Like people like me, for example, if I were to leave this country, I would be I would face what's called a 10-year bar, right? And there would be no guarantee that I'd be allowed back. Well, that's because of the Clinton administration and what Clinton signed into law in the mid-1990s, right? And what from Clinton to Bush to Obama, now to Trump. So this didn't happen just overnight. And I think we have to examine it from that perspective and also make sure, as you pointed out, that we look at it from a global perspective. Why are people moving? What are the actual root causes of migration and why people have to move? You know, I mean, I think we have to really interrogate these questions. And unfortunately, we are so busy being distracted, right, not just by this president, by everything around us. You know, I mean, let's not forget, like, this is going to be a turnout game, this election. And in a midterm, turnout has not always been good for the Democrats. Why is that?
Well, the New York Times ran a piece a couple of days ago suggesting that the Latinos weren't going to vote in any significant numbers.
I thought that was actually, it's funny you said it. I literally emailed that piece to I don't know how many people and saying, look, like, this is a bigger problem. And not just Latinos, by the way. How about Asian people? You know, Asian people, Asian Americans are now the fastest growing immigrant group and the fastest growing racial group. Where do Asian people play a role into this? In the state of California, Asians and Latinos make up the majority.
Right. And you also said they were the fastest growing group of undocumented immigrants.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And to me, you know, that's why when I wrote the book, I'm sure the subtitle is Notes of an Undocumented Citizen, which is a nod to James Baldwin, whose influence on me has been, you know, tremendous since I was a kid. But I wanted to use the term citizen because I think that's actually what's at play here. Like, what does it mean to be a citizen? Like, look, I'm not a citizen by birth, right? And I'm not a citizen by paper or by law. I have to be a citizen of something else, which is a citizen of contribution. I have to engage, I have to contribute, I have to know that I'm a part of this society. And yet, there are many people in this country who are born in this country, who are naturalized citizens, who have the papers, who have made the choice to not engage.
Right, not vote.
What is the, and, you know, many of them, by the way, are my relatives,
right,
who I, like, have to talk to every day. Like, are you registered to vote? You know that this is about to, you know, do you know where you're, do you know where you can vote? But to a lot of people, in this country, to a lot of people in the state of California, you know, America is just something you buy, something you wear, something you eat. It's not something you participate in.
So,
and I think that's a crisis. We are in a crisis of engagement, I would argue. And we have to know that, first of all, I mean, black people in this country, right? I mean, look, you wouldn't have the 1965 Immigration Act without the 1964 Civil Rights Act and 1964 Voting Rights Act, right? Like, so the immigrant rights movement in many ways is built on the struggle of black people and their white allies. And so, to me, the fact that black people had always put their lives out there in terms of civil disobedience and making sure that people are protesting and are engaging, what Colin Kaepernick is doing, you know, I think that serves as a real inspiration to us and must serve an inspiration to all of us, especially people who have come to this country post-1965.
But what would your explanation be or analysis be of that New York Times story we were talking about? Why do Latinos, aren't they, you know, this is a president who insulted them on the very first day, called them a bunch of rapists and murderers, and has been ripping Latino children from the arms of their parents at the southern border. You would think that that would strike deeply at the heart of Latinos and motivate them to want to vote this guy out.
But, well, first of all, I mean, Latinos are not a monolithic group. Mm-hmm. As are not white people and black people and Asian people, right? Absolutely, this has been horrendous and, you know, just terrible what is happening. But you also have to recognize that when a group of people are hurting, right, like there's kind of an insularity that sets in, right? Like there was a study, for example, that showed that if you're a naturalized citizen or a U.S. citizen by birth, and you live with undocumented people in your family, in your household, you are less likely, right, to actually want to seek out citizenship because you're afraid that you might negatively impact your relatives at home, that you might accidentally out them, right?
Right.
So there's the fear even within households about that, which I thought was really interesting that I hadn't realized. Right. And so I think the trauma of all of this, and I think the fear that has become kind of stock in trade, has had really, you know, deep impact about how people in the Latino community see themselves and see their relationship, you know, with this government. I thought it was interesting in that New York Times article, some people, you know, said, well, you know, what's the difference? I'm not sure electing anyone makes a difference anymore. That kind of apathy,
right.
Which is not which we have seen in the white community, and to some extent the black community that the Obama, you know, that the Obama era has really kind of really inspired, right? And that's not, that kind of apathy is not just isolated to the white community. That is totally within the immigrant community as well. You know, we're just here. I talked to my aunt after the election, one of my aunts who's a U.S. citizen who didn't vote, right? And she said, oh, why would it matter if I voted? We're just here to work, right? Meaning they've internalized that we're just labor.
Well, it is mystifying and it's tragic. And the cynical version is that you get the government you deserve. And,
yeah, that is the cynical version, but I refuse, what did James Baldwin say? I cannot be a pessimist because I am alive. To be a pessimist means that life is nothing but an academic matter, so I have to be an optimist. So I have to think that every day. I have to be an optimist. I cannot succumb to either cynicism or pessimism. That's too easy.
And again, I'm speaking with Jose Antonio Vargas, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and Emmy-nominated filmmaker and a leading voice for the human rights of immigrants. He is the author of the brand-new book just out, Dear America, Notes of an Undocumented Citizen. And Jose, since you are subject to deportation at any time, and, you know, we've had to go through some sort of secret ritual, if you will, to even do this phone conversation, and you have no permanent residence, that's got to be really exhausting. I did a forum recently at UCLA or a little while back, had a bunch of dreamers, and one of the young Latino women was talking about how it was, what it was like growing up, going to school, knowing that if you, you know, one wrong move and you could get deported. And she accidentally parked in somebody's parking spot and got into trouble and the police came, et cetera. And she was telling me that, you know, from the time that she was, even before she could drive and get a license, she was taught to drive because in the event that anybody get deported, they had a default situation where she had to drive to an aunt's place or something like that. And she was telling me about that, just the psychological pressure on her on a daily basis growing up in this country in the shadows was just heartbreaking to hear.
Well, that's actually what I wanted to write about. I wanted to understand what trauma feels like. And, you know, I came here when I was 12, found out I was undocumented when I was 16. I'm 37 now. So from age 16 to 36, because I started writing this book when I turned 37, I never really thought about it. I just, you know, I never, my way of dealing with it, I mean, other people deal with it by, like, you know, people cope in whatever ways they need to cope. The way I coped is I just did as much as I could. I just juggled as many balls as possible so I don't have to feel anything. You know, I don't have to think about being depressed. I'm depressed, but I'm going to, like, go through, I'm just going to manage it. I'm stressed out, but guess what? It's oxygen. So I'm just going to go through it. So it wasn't until I really wrote this book and really grappled and faced with what I've been feeling since I was a kid. And, you know, it was actually really powerful to do that for me. It was powerful to put words in it, to actually put it down and say that this is what has happened to me. Now I know what it is. Now I'm clearer to myself. I understand myself better. I understand why I had been, because I thought all those years that I hid from the government, right, from age 16 to 30 until I came out as undocumented 7 years ago, I thought I was just hiding from the government, in many ways hiding in plain sight. I mean, I was working at the Washington Post. I didn't know that that impacted every relationship I ever had. So not only was I was hiding from myself, you know, I was kind of hiding from myself, right?
Well, that's why the, I mean, in the book, it's the, such a powerful moment when you out yourself in spite of the advice that this would be catastrophic for you. And that had to be a wrenching decision.
You know, it was, but I'm so glad I did it because I think, look, they've already detained me. So, as you know, from reading the book, like, I was detained for 8 hours. It was only 8 hours in South Texas 4 years ago when nobody cared, right, when it wasn't a crisis. So I know what that feels like. I've gone through that. If I get deported, okay, we'll go through that process. We'll fight it. We'll try to fight it. Right? So I am prepared for those scenarios. What I'm not prepared for anymore is not living my life. What I'm not prepared for anymore is not looking at my life as it is and making the most of it as much as I can. Right? To not live in any delusion about what depression is and what stress is, and I have to stop running away from people. I have to stop hiding from my friends. I have to actually live my life as it is.
And again, I'm speaking with Jose Antonio Vargas, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, an Emmy-nominated filmmaker, and a leading voice for the human rights of immigrants. He's the author of the brand-new book just out, Dear America, Notes of an Undocumented Citizen. So let's talk a little bit about the politics. We started out the conversation obviously talking about the caravan and how Trump is just lying through his teeth saying that there are riots in California against sanctuary cities. I mean, he's making up the idea that he's going to come up with a middle-class tax cut in November while the Congress is not even in session. You're just astounded that people believe this stuff. And maybe we have a crisis in this country. You're saying that we have a crisis about civics, about citizens abdicating their responsibilities and their engagement by not even bothering to vote. But I think we also have an education crisis, don't we? How could people be so gullible?
Well, but how do people become gullible? What are the stories we tell them? You know, this is why, you know, journalism is sacred to me. It's been my identity since I was, 16 years old out there. I found that I was here illegally. I became a journalist because seeing my name on a piece of paper, my byline, I thought was a way of existing. So it's all I ever did was journalism from age 16, you know, till now. And I consider what I'm doing journalism. Other people may call it other things, but that's my identity. That's how I, journalism is the way I see the world. It's the way I kind of make kind of sense of not just myself, but, you know, where everything fits. And I feel that we in the media, with some exceptions, of course, right, have done a really poor job covering this issue. And, of course, you have this crisis of apathy that people don't want to hear this stuff, right? It's easier to just think, oh, immigration reform, oh, the wall, oh, the border. Like, let me give you one perfect example. The narrative that people like me don't contribute to this country, that we are taxing this country, right? How often do you hear about the fact that undocumented immigrants pay billions of dollars in taxes and contribute billions of dollars to Social Security?
Well, the figures are extraordinary. The undocumented immigrants pay approximately $11.6 billion annually in state and local taxes and $13 billion to Social Security.
So my point is, how rare I have to fight the New York Times and the Washington Post and NPR, quote-unquote liberal outlets, right? You know, the enemies of Trump, to get those numbers out. Because we have so cemented the narrative that immigrants like me are not contributing anything, that we're just taxing. So if you were to look at the narrative around, quote-unquote, illegal people, right? In many ways, the news media, even the ones that are considered progressive and liberal, have been complicit to this narrative.
Well, I think there's a political confusion, though, isn't there, over this issue? It's not a left-right issue because you've got the right-wing Chamber of Commerce in bed with the left-wing Maldef and La Raza, and you've got the left-wing labor unions in bed with right-wing Minutemen.
I mean, that's a whole other hour of a radio show. But this is why, and for me, when I think about immigration, you know what I'm thinking about? Because I love numbers, so which is, you know, that's the journalist in me. According to the Pew Research Center, right now there are 43 million immigrants in America. 43 million, documented, and 11 million of whom are undocumented. In the next 50 years, those 43 million people and their descendants and offsprings will constitute 88% of the total U.S. population growth. That's why California looks the way that it does. That's why Texas looks the way that it does. And guess what? What's happening in Texas and California is happening in North Carolina. It's happening in Georgia. It's happening in Arkansas. It's happening in Wisconsin, right? So when I talk about immigration, I'm actually not talking about immigration reform. I'm talking about what this country looks like and what it will continue to look like.
And again, I'm speaking with Jose Antonio Vargas, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and Emmy-nominated filmmaker and a leading voice for the human rights of immigrants. His brand-new book just out is Dear America, Notes of an Undocumented Citizen. So just in closing, Jose, it's extraordinary that the President of the United States was at a rally, you just mentioned Texas, down in Texas trying to help out Ted Cruz against Beto O'Rourke. And, of course, anti-immigrant fervor is probably helping Ted Cruz a lot and hurting Beto O'Rourke because he has a more humane and nuanced position. Trump's rhetoric, though, is astounding. He's talking about giving immigrants cars, and then he goes on to say luxury cars, and then he says maybe they want Rolls Royces. I mean, it's the extraordinary stoicism of people that have worked so hard. I've never met more hardworking people than Latinos, frankly.
You have never met them, but I remember when we were making White People for MTV, right. MTV did a study. 75% of white people live in predominantly white towns. That was a surprise to me because I grew up in California. 90% of white people have predominantly white friends. Meaning, the only time that those white people, right, would see people like us is the news media they consume and the television shows and movies they watch. right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is not a surprise that all of those nonsensical, inaccurate, just morally corrupt descriptions stick. They stick because they don't know us. They don't know us. And the people who do know us, that's why, you know, in the book, I made a very, very cautious effort to name, with their permission, every single person, white, black, Latino, Asian, but mostly white people, because I grew up in a kind of a white high school. I made a conscious effort to name every single one of them, because I wouldn't have survived in this country without all those people who stood up with me and for me. And they have to be a part of the conversation.
Well, Jose Antonio Vargas, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Jose Antonio Vargas, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and Emmy-nominated filmmaker and a leading voice for the human rights of immigrants. He's the founder and CEO of Define American, the nation's leading nonprofit media and cultural organization that fights injustice and anti-immigrant hate through the power of storytelling. He's worked as a reporter at The Washington Post, The Huffington Post, The San Francisco Chronicle, and other leading publications, and he's written stories for The New York Times Magazine and Time, and his work has appeared in Rolling Stone and The New Yorker. In addition, he's produced and directed, documented, an autobiographical feature documentary that aired on CNN and White People, an hour-long MTV special on what it means to be young and white in a changing America. And he's currently subject to deportation at any time, and so he has no permanent residence. And his latest book just out is Dear America, Notes of an Undocumented Citizen.